accessibility for people with diverse cognitive and physical abilities. You are listening to All Access Pass, created by the Accessibility Collective on 101.9 CITR FM. CITR is a collectively run show that covers issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with diverse cognitive and physical abilities.
On campus and beyond.
We are broadcasting live from our studio in the AMS Student Nest on the traditional, ancestral, occupied, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people.
Hey there, happy Wednesday. It's our the All Access Pass first show of 2018. And in studio, I'm joined by Taylor, DP, Desi, Buticio, and Kaylin and Sarah, and yeah. Anyway, on the show today, Toronto is about to adopt a new accessibility symbol. UBC has its first ever American Sign Language course, and a new mental health literacy initiative is being implemented in North and West Vancouver. Now on to some disability news. What's new, guys?
Well, like you said, Toronto is about to introduce a new accessibility symbol. So a Toronto-based group is encouraging Ontario to legally adopt a new symbol to replace the International Symbol of Access, that blue and white wheelchair symbol that marks parking spots, wheelchair-accessible washrooms, automatic door buttons, and more. The new symbol, called the Modified or Dynamic Symbol of Access, has a more defined human figure tilted forward with arms bent behind them, as if they are rapidly pushing the wheelchair forward.
Interesting. What's the story behind the International Symbol of Access?
I'm glad you asked. The International Symbol of Access was designed by a Danish design student, Susan Kofod, in 1968. Originally drawn as a white wheelchair on a blue background, a head was added the following year, and the symbol was adopted as an international standard. The symbol is used internationally to denote areas that have been made more accessible to wheelchair users and others with mobility needs, and to mark cars, parking spots, transit routes, automatic door buttons, and washrooms that are used by people with disabilities.
And how about the new modified symbol of access? Where did it come from?
Well, the modified symbol was the brainchild of a Massachusetts-based duo, Sarah Hendren and Brian Glennie. It started as a 2010 street art project where they plastered accessibility signage of the International Symbol of Access with stickers of a figure more actively manually pushing the wheelchair. The project grew over time into a campaign to replace the International Symbol of Access with one designed by Tim Ferguson Sauter in collaboration with the team, and they called it the Accessible Icon Project. The modified International Symbol of Access is similar to the original, with a white wheelchair on a blue background. However, the modified version has the figure leaning forward with arms bent backward as if to propel their chair quickly forward, whereas the original can be interpreted as a figure sitting upright with arms on the armrests, as if they were being pushed by an unseen attendant. The modified ISA, or International Symbol of Access, has been adopted internationally by hundreds of cities and towns, public and private institutions, by governments and individuals. That's where the forward movement comes in. In 2016, they began promoting the symbol in Ontario and have since gained a ton of support from organizations such as Muscular Dystrophy Canada, Special Olympics Canada, Stopgap Foundation, Access Now, and Accessibility Ontario, just to name a few.
So it's getting traction, getting popularity, it sounds like. What makes the modified symbol a better representation?
Well, Dylan Idzikowitz, co-founder of the Forward Movement, says it's just better. His group points to the more defined figure, which puts the emphasis on the person rather than the wheelchair or disability, as well as the depiction of forward movement. The portrayal of movement, they say, is, and I quote, a symbolic action that emphasizes differing abilities, and this reframes the way society views and interacts with persons with a disability. They also posit that the change of symbol serves as a medium to foster conversations about accessibility and disability rights.
So is everyone on board with this new modified symbol?
Well, no. Some people with disabilities are opposed to the modified symbol for several reasons. A lot of the pushback to the modified symbol is in response to the emphasis on forward motion with moving arms and the implication that movement, and particularly the rather exaggerated movement depicted, is somehow inherently better than more stationary original symbol. Many see the new symbol as perpetuating ableist notions of worthiness tied to one's ability to move. Whereas the International Symbol of Access depicts both manual and power wheelchair users, the modified symbol excludes the latter category. Many would like to see symbols such as these designed by those with a lived, immersive experience of the challenges, needs, and nuances of disability communities, that is, people with disabilities themselves. This is echoed in a popular slogan chanted by the Forward Movement at a recent rally, "Nothing about us without us." The symbol is far from inclusive, as fewer than 10% of people with disabilities use a wheelchair. Of course, designing a symbol that is inclusive of is exceptionally difficult for such a large and varied population. It quickly becomes clear that not every disability can be graphically portrayed with one symbol, especially since many disabilities are invisible. Some within disability communities say that if a new symbol is going to be introduced, it should be one that is more inclusive than the original, not less.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, it just seems... It just makes more sense to me to keep things, like, simple. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. I don't really get the outrage on that, but whatever. Have any alternative symbols been proposed apart from the modified symbol prompted by the Accessible Icon Project and the Forward Movement?
Well, one that I found and liked was proposed by Alex Haggard in a Medium article titled "The Search for a Better Accessibility Symbol is Solving the Wrong Design Problem." It incorporates the same blue and white color scheme as the original, original International Symbol of Access. So what do you folks think about the modified symbol? Anyone?
Right, well, hello everyone. Of course, there are many different points of view, as Taylor was emphasizing before. I would like to note and emphasize that the version of the symbol has been already utilized in the U.S., in the states of New York and Connecticut, more specifically. And the people that want to use it is basically a choice. But as it is a choice and it is something new, there are always advantages and disadvantages, right? So one of the supporters is Paul Rosen, this Canadian Paralympian and gold medal winner, says that, well, the implementation of the symbol is crucial to changing perceptions. He literally says, I want people to understand that just because you're in a wheelchair or you're not missing something else. Actually, well, maybe you can have issues, but that doesn't mean that your life is over, he says. And in part, I believe it encapsulates that. I mean, if you see the symbol, it is a person moving forward. And the person that is using the chair is moving forward as well. I believe that people with disabilities are not sitting still, but they're not moving backwards, but forward. Right now, they have many communication channels in which they can express their jobs, how they think. I mean, Spencer does that. He's a writer for Vice. At the same time, there are many tools like online education. Just think about the past in which many people with disabilities were not able to go to university because of the accessibility issue. But right now, they can even earn an online degree. But also disadvantages. Not everybody agrees. Would you like to say something else? Okay. Yeah?
No.
Are you sure? Sure, Sarah? No?
Yeah, no.
And, well, many people believe that the symbol is a product of political correctness gone distorted. Others argue that governmental bodies should not be spending taxpayer dollars to draw and produce new symbols, as sometimes it's better just to keep things simpler, right? Or what do you think, Spencer?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with, like, keeping things simple and just, like, sticking to what works. Sometimes simple is better, like I just said. But
I'm kind of confused as to why this is less simple, though. And in regards to sticking to what works, maybe, but if you always stick to what works, there's no room for improvement. So
that's true.
I don't know.
I never thought about it that way.
And also, I know that things work to some extent, but we always have to think about improving because, like, if all you have in that moment is to represent you as a symbol, then you may as well make that symbol good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I sort of think that if we're going to spend all this political energy changing, getting this new modified symbol put into place and adopted across, well, I mean, it's not us doing it, but in Ontario, but they want to do it, the Forward Movement wants to do it federally as well. I think that it should be a symbol that's better, and I don't see that this symbol is better, and I think that it has a lot of problems with it. I do like the example I found about Alex Haggard's idea. It has a lot of variability that's built into it, so it has room to grow into because it, instead of just having a symbol of a wheelchair user, it could be any image could be put in there. So it could be the symbol for the deaf and hard of hearing, mm-hmm. which is an ear with a strike through it. And it could be the infinity symbol, which is used to represent neurodiverse communities. Mm-hmm. And I think that leaves a lot of room to grow into the kind of accessible future we want to see. And I feel like that is actual forward movement and not just inclining a person's back that's sitting in a wheelchair forward to make it look like they're in some kind of race.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. I do agree with that. I think what we need to keep in mind is disability is not physically, it's visually as well. So, I mean, wheelchair users, it's widely looked at because that's disability, but for a person who has a hearing impaired, I mean, it affects them too the same way, just differently. So we just have to keep an open mind when we're discussing disability or accessibility.
No, yeah, that's totally right. I mean, perhaps what is needed instead of, you know, this new dynamic international symbol of access is a universal symbol, as you were saying. Maybe, I mean, why pick a person in a chair or a chair at all? Why not a shape, a flower, or something totally abstract that can stand in as a symbol for accessibility in all its form? It would be wonderful.
Yeah. I feel like it would be great to just come up with a completely new symbol. It could be anything. It could be the symbol that Prince changed his name to. It just something new that denotes accessibility and disability, and that could stand in for a lot of different things. But I do like the variety that comes with the other Alex Haggard's example or proposal. Go ahead, Sarah.
Just really quickly, because we're out of time. The only issue with that is that the cultural change above, like, you could implement that in one state or country, but having that across many countries would just be really difficult. So it's realistic. Anyways.
Definitely a step in the right direction, though.
Yep.
Here's Young and Wild by the Strumbellas. From an airplane to see if I
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9. You were just listening to a song by the Strombellas called Young and Wild. Up next, Kaylin is going to look into American Sign Language at UBC. Kaylin?
So UBC has newly added an American Sign Language course as an option in the linguistics department. This is a huge deal as it is steps towards accessibility in a different realm for students. The goal of this newly added course is to be a stepping stone for what the linguistics department hopes will become ingrained in the department as more than an optional course, but as a key part of the of a linguistics degree. There are no prerequisites for this course, allowing anyone who is interested to enroll. Although this is the first time the course has been offered at UBC, the class is already filled up, and there is a waiting list with even more people who are interested in taking the course.
How did this course get started?
Offering this program through the university demonstrates that American Sign Language is not just a tool, but it is a language that needs to be better recognized as such. In the past, students attending UBC had only one option for taking an ASL course, which was through the Vancouver Community College, which often caused conflict between their regular session classes at UBC. UBC has now become the newest of several other Canadian universities to offer ASL courses. A fundamental part of getting this course off the ground was the help from a UBIC professor, Nigel Howard, whom is a deaf interpreter and instructor of ASL at the university. There was little debate for which department to place the ASL course in, because placing it in linguistics helps to debunk the misconceptions that are centered around ASL and the deaf community. It is important for people to overcome and understand ASL and not misconceive the purpose of a course as important as this one. UVic has offered an ASL course for 10 years already, and other universities across the country were faster to integrate this course into their programs, but the important thing is that UBC has now included it. This is only the beginning for ASL at UBC, and I personally can't wait to see where this introductory course can lead. I have hopes that it will allow for a more widely accepted understanding of ASL and perhaps allow for a larger amount of accessibility at UBC as a whole.
It's certainly a step in the right direction, giving like making education, especially university education, accessible. Thank you for that. Up next, we're going to be talking about mental health literacy. Sarah, why is it so important to have a program like this implemented?
I think, as we all know, mental health affects a lot of people, and it affects many people around us. And North Vancouver and West Vancouver public schools have decided that they're going to take a leap forward, and they're going to implement mental health literacy to grade 9 students. And, so things that they're going to cover are suicide, bullying, and the fentanyl crisis. So, this program is the first of its kind in provincial public schools and uses a mental health literacy course, which is developed by Dr. Stan Kutcher. He's a professor of psychiatry at Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia. And mental health literacy is defined as knowledge, beliefs, and abilities that enable the recognition, management, or prevention of mental health problems. And you can imagine that since many of these mental health problems come around age 14 or 15, this would be a really important thing to implement in the school systems. Mental health literacy is the foundation for mental health promotion, prevention, and care, and can be successfully implemented through classroom-based curriculum interventions, much like sex ed. And they have been scientifically shown to improve mental health-related outcomes for students and also their teachers. So, according to the Mental Health Literacy Project, which was funded by Health Canada in 2005, Canadians have a relatively good mental health literacy. And that includes knowledge of prevalence, awareness of warning signs, and identification of mental disorders, which all help with combating mental illness early. When the students were talked to, it seemed like a lot of them found that part to be really important, that they can identify a mental disorder as something separate from everyday quirkiness. The project found, however, that there should be improvement of mental health problems, especially in youth, as many people underestimate the prevalence, and youth especially confuse other types of disorders with mental disorders. So this project might be a step in the right direction to combat these issues. The feedback from children at Sutherland Secondary School seems to be positive, with students saying that made them feel more accepted from their peers, with them having knowledge of their mental health issues. It seems to be a step in the right direction compared to the silence that was felt even 10 years ago about mental health, says other students. And Education Minister Rob Fleming seems to be on board as well, saying districts are doing things differently and we're looking to bring an additional layer of coordination to having a province-wide mental health strategy. So who knows, you might see this in other public schools as well. The Mental Health Literacy Project has reported stigma and discrimination against persons with mental disorders, especially for serious mental illness, and it's still problematic in Canada. Despite awareness that stigma and discrimination exists against mental disorders, Canadians often find themselves unwilling to disclose mental health problems. This is especially prevalent in the workplace due to fear of stigma and discrimination. Public education, including in schools and workplace, may aid in reducing stigma. And who knows, maybe this program will become part of UBC as well. UBC's Faculty of Education is co-developing with Western University, St. Francis Xavier University, and Dalhousie University an online mental health literacy curriculum for pre-service teachers, led by Dr. Wendy Carr, Dr. Susan Roger, Dr. Chris Gillum, and Dr. Stan Kutcher, who is implementing the program, who has developed the program for these grade 9 students. According to an academic experience survey released by UBC Student Union in July, even though 90% of graduate students are aware of the counseling services available at UBC, only 17% find that they've used them or been helped by them. So out of 2,484 students, only 17% have accessed them. It also found that 43% of undergrads regularly worry about expenses, and many experience hardship related to these finances. Nixon says that he's noticed many, Dan Nixon, who is a second-year student at University of British Columbia and is also part of JAC.org, has noticed that many students prioritize academics to the point that mental health falls by the wayside. He says, it has to come from a large level at the university, but it's also down to an individual level on the professors and the advisors and the resident advisors to say mental health is a priority, and so we're going to be there for people when they need it.
We're going to go into break. What's this? What's this? Here, this one. I'm having kind of. How do you even pronounce that?
Begonia.
Okay. here's begonia with
juniper.
Oh, no.
All my shit, All my shit's gonna hit the ceiling. Then you see what I've been trying hard to keep myself from revealing. I've got a real good feeling. Dressed in my finest glitter, holding tight, trying hard not to be a quitter. There's a lump in my throat every day I wake up and think maybe I just can't deliver. Think that I can't deliver. Oh no, 7 years got the riches. Walking up, walking down streets of my hometown, thinking that I'm too old to be bitching. I'm sure habits I should be ditching. Dying hard or dying, don't know where they come from. Come from.
Yeah. never thought you'd be the kind of guy to get a day job. 9 to 5, you're gonna take off. You're gonna go against the grain. So why you say-
Hello, this is DP with you, and I have Yuri Arais on the phone, who is the artistic director for Kickstart. Welcome to All Access Pass.
Thanks for having me, DP.
No, thank you. Can you briefly tell us what is Kickstart?
Kickstart Disability Arts and Culture is the only arts organization in British Columbia that professionally supports and promotes artists who identify as living with a disability.
Okay.
And so, I can tell you what that actually means, because it's such a statement.
Yeah.
When we say that we professionally support and promote artists who identify with disabilities, what we are is we are a professional arts organization, and we create professional opportunities for visual artists, for performers, all kinds of different genres of art. And by doing that, we give artists professional opportunities to, you know, show their work. And most importantly, what we do is we pay our artists professional fees for the work that they do. And that's really what sets us apart from anybody else.
What are some challenges Kickstart has faced in changing society's perspective on disabilities, that they too can shine and are talented in every way possible?
That's a great question, DP. And the best example I can give you is this past November, we had an exhibition which was at the Pendulum Gallery downtown Vancouver, which is right behind the Vancouver Art Gallery. And it was a juried exhibition of artists from across Canada who all live with disabilities, and specifically who all use wheelchairs or mobility devices. And one of the most interesting things about that show, always when we put a show like that together, is, you know, people are always surprised at the work that they see, which is always surprising to me, because what that does, it just shows that people, you know, have a hard time seeing past disability. And one of the goals that we have is to always show the artist first their work, what they create, what they do, and then everything else comes second. So the creative side of individuals is the most important part to us. Mm-hmm. And within saying that, you know, accessibility becomes a big part of what we do just by the nature of the individuals that we work with. Because we live in a city that is so inaccessible and a country that is so inaccessible because we have no laws protecting people with disabilities in our country, well, not on a whole yet, it's very challenging for an organization like us because we don't want to do events and venues that aren't, you know, don't facilitate people of all abilities to enjoy a performance or come to a show. So accessibility becomes a big part of our conversation a lot.
So, in honor of Kickstart's 20th anniversary, can you tell us any memorable stories that stood out to you?
20 years is so long. It's unbelievable. I can tell you that my connection to Kickstart is very interesting because it is from almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I used to live in Minneapolis when the first festival actually happened. We started out as a festival organization, and the actual first festival we produced was in 2001. And that festival, I came to Vancouver and gave lectures on representing artists with disabilities because that's what I've, from an art gallery point of view, that's what I've done most of my life. So from seeing Kickstart develop and grow over time, there's an incredible amount of highlights because we've been able to work with so many people around the world with so many different talents. And I mean, it's overwhelming. So to choose one example is almost impossible just because we've been doing so much stuff for so many years. But I guess if I was forced to pick a highlight, it would be a very general highlight, which would be just making a statement of a highlight for what we do is giving artists professional opportunities and treating them and paying them in the same way that any other professional artist in our community gets paid. That's a highlight to every year of our job here at Kickstart.
Very well said. Are there any events happening to celebrate Kickstart's 20th anniversary? If so, can you tell us about them?
I can tell you about a couple of them for sure.
Okay.
Our anniversary season starts in April, we're partnering with a lot of different organizations to do a bunch of different things. But a couple highlights I'll share with you is in April, we're doing a concert with Galen Lee, a classically trained musician, violinist, and singer who lives in Duluth in the United States. She'll be performing at CBC Studios on April 6th. In June, we're doing a partnership with the Vancouver Art Gallery for BC Access Awareness Day, which is on June 2nd. And we will be working with the Vancouver Art Gallery to offer a tactile touch tour of part of their collection for people who are sight impaired or blind, which is one of the first times that they've ever done anything like that, which is really exciting. In September, we'll be partnering with The Kulch in East Vancouver to be doing Pikachu Night, which is we will be doing a night of artist talks with 10 artists where we give them 5 minutes apiece, and they will just tell us about who they are, what they do, and show us their work. As well, I would say in December, we will continue to do our annual public gathering for International Day of Persons with Disability, which we started 3 years ago as the first public gathering for people with disabilities, primarily because most celebrations happen inside, and we all want to be seen in public and be acknowledged. So we do a gathering in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery every year, and we invite people to come join us, where we have a banner, and we just stand outside and to share the day with everybody. So some highlights coming up for our 20th anniversary would be those.
That sounds great. For the future, what lies in store for Kickstart? Are there any new projects in the horizon?
There's always projects in the horizons. One thing about being a nonprofit is that we have to plan so far out, so many years ahead of time. And we've been planning a long time for our 20th anniversary. So a lot of our planning has gone into this coming year. And I would say the future of Kickstart, my goal is to just continue to keep this organization alive in our city, doing as much work as we can to help make our city more accessible culturally, as well as continue to put artists with disabilities in the forefront of our cultural community to show the value of the work that they bring to our city.
So that almost wraps up our interview, but is there anything you would like to say to the CITR listeners?
I think what I would want to say is, first and foremost, go to our website, which is kickstartdisability.ca. And on our website, there's a lot of information about who we are, what we do, how you can donate and support our organization. There's also an artist directory on there, which is free to artists, and you can sign up on there and you can list yourself, the medium you work in, and things like that for other people to find artists with disabilities to work with. There's all kinds of resources on our website, including accessibility information about theaters in our city, as well as accessibility housing that's available in our city. We really try to be involved in as many aspects of the community as we possibly can. So our website is a huge resource, and I would hope that people would take advantage of using that.
And that wraps up. Thank you, Yuri, for taking the time to chat with me. And I know I'm a little bit early, but happy 20th anniversary to Kickstart Disabilities.
I can't thank you enough, Deepi, and thanks for the time today.
No, thank you.
The holidays got you down? Whether it's pressure to make it perfect, tension with loved ones, unfulfilled expectations, dissatisfaction at work, or unrest in the world at large, maybe combined with winter weather and darkening days, all of this can contribute to self-judgment and guilt, sadness, and lethargy. It's a tough time of year, and psychotherapist Jeffrey B. Rubin has 7 handy tips and tricks to help you out. 1. Connect with those you love. 2. Have realistic expectations. Seek good enough rather than perfect. 3. Cherish what you're grateful for. 4. Build in what helps you flourish. 5. Create healthy boundaries with loved ones. 6. Constructively address family conflicts through empathetic listening and compassionate feedback. And 7. Help those in need. Good luck out there, and I'm proud of you.
Welcome back to All Access Pass. You were listening to the song Sarah by Lynette Williams.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well, closing out the show, we will not be back next week, January 17th, but we'll be back the following week on January 24th.
Yeah, tune in as All Access Pass puts sex and disability in bed together.
Oh yeah. Well, thank you very much for Yuri Aras for the interview.
sorry. Okay. Remember to like us. Remember to like our page on Facebook and Twitter. Please follow us at @access_CITR.
So, well, thank you to Addison for selecting the music for this week. And as always, if you missed on any of our live shows or want to listen again, you can listen to our podcast shows on CITR.ca by going to the search box and searching All Access Pass.
Stick around for Arts Report, which is up next. Have a good night, everyone.
About fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like,